Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Today we're reading again from the second canto. It's titled Cosmic Manifestation, or Cosmic Creation, rather. No, Cosmic Manifestation. Chapter 1, the first step in God realization, text 17. So I only really ever hear it, and I don't always hear everything. So if I forget something or neglect you in some way, please let me know. So, Abhyasen Manasa Shudham. Trivid Brahmaksharam Param. Mano Yachej Jita Svasu. Brahma Bijam Avishmaran. Amyasin Manasa Sudham. Trivid Brahmaksharam Param. Mano yachchej jita svaso. Brahma bijam avishmaran. Amyasen manasa shudham. Trivid brahmaksharam param. Mano yachchej jita svaso. Brahma bijam avishmaran. You'd be so kind. Vyasen manasa shudham. Trivid brahmaksharam param.
Mano yachchej jita svaso. Brahma bijam avishmaran. Yasin manasa shudham. Trivid brahmaksharam param. Mano yachchej jita svaso. Brahma bijam avismaram. Yasin manasa shudham. Trivid brahmaksharam param. Mano yachchej jita svaso. Brahma bijam avismaram. Abhyasen manasa shudham. Vivid brahmaksharam param. Mano yachchej jita svaso. Brahma bijam avismaram.
Okay, so the word for words. Abhyaset. One should practice. Manasa. By the mind. Shudham. Sacred. Trivrit. Composed of the three. Brahma Aksharam. Transcendental letters. Param. The supreme. Manaha. Mind. Yachchet. Get under control. Jita svasaha. By regulating the breathing air. Brahma. Absolute. Bijam. Seed. Abhismaran. Without being forgotten. The translation. After sitting in the above manner, make the mind remember the three transcendental letters. AUM or OM, by regulating the breathing process, controlling the mind so as not to forget the transcendental seed. Srila Prabhupada's purport. OMKAR, or the pranava, is the seed of transcendental realization, and it is composed of the three transcendental letters. AUM, or in Sanskrit it's Akara, Ukara, Makara. By its chanting by the mind, in conjunction with the breathing process, which is a transcendental but mechanical way of getting into trance, as devised by the experience of great mystics, one is able to bring the mind, which is materially absorbed, under control. This is the way of changing the habit of the mind. The mind is not to be killed. Mind or desire cannot be stopped, but to develop a desire to function for spiritual realization, the quality of engagement by the mind has to be changed. The mind is the pivot of the active sense organs, and as such, if the quality of thinking, feeling, and willing is changed, naturally the quality of actions by the instrumental senses will also change. Omkar is the seed of all transcendental sound, and it is only the transcendental sound which can bring about the desired change of the mind and the senses. Even a mentally deranged man can be cured by a treatment of transcendental sound. In Bhagavad Gita, the pranava, Omkar, has been accepted as the direct, literal representation of the supreme absolute truth. One who is not able to chant directly the holy name of the Lord, as recommended above, can easily chant the pranava, Omkar. This Omkar is a note of address, such as, O my Lord, just as Om Hari Om means, O my Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As we have explained before, the Lord's holy name is identical with the Lord himself. So also is Omkar. But persons who are unable to realize the transcendental personal form or name of the Lord on account of their imperfect senses, in other words, the neophytes, are trained to the practice of self-realization by this mechanical process of regulating the breathing function and simultaneously repeating the pranava, Omkar, within the mind. As we have several times expressed, since the transcendental name, form, attributes, pastimes, etc., of the personality of Godhead are impossible to understand with the present material senses, it is necessary that through the mind, the center of sensual activities, such transcendental realization be set into motion. The devotees directly fix their minds on the person of the absolute truth. But one who is unable to accommodate such personal features of the absolute is disciplined in impersonality to train the mind to make further progress. Okay. Om Ajnatamarandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Shtapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam. It's okay. So, I was asked yesterday to give class today, so if I'm lacking in any way, you can blame Kalakata. So this verse particularly is concentrating on Om. As devotees, we hear a lot about Om, I guess. And usually we refer to the chanting of Om as being, let's see, what's the word that I want? Secondary or something like that, like an intermediary stage towards the devotional service. And that's right. Because Prabhupada is explaining in this purport that actually the chanting of Om is for those who they can't understand that Krishna is a person. So essentially speaking, there are many explanations for these three syllables, A, U, and M. If you can read probably volumes and volumes of literature. But it said that the entire universe is resting in this microphone, in these three letters. So if you go through it, A, it can represent, first, it can represent Balaram, because Balaram is, what's the word? It's the, it's an English word I'm looking for. Prabhupada uses it. It's the stratus stop, he says. It means that it is like, everything is resting on Balaram. So there already is everything. And then, so specifically this explanation is referring to the Chatur Vyuha of the four emanations. So there's Balaram, and then the U, it represents Pradyumna. So Pradyumna, he's... Yeah, exactly. Go. Oh, reverse, sorry. So Pradyumna, he's actually like Mahavishnu. And then the M, it stands for Aniruddha, who is like Paramatma. So if you don't think that everything is contained already, we have the little dot, so above the M, and in the Gopal Tapani Upanishad, it says that dot is representative of Krishna himself. And the explanation is given that, so this dot is, although it comes at the end, technically speaking, it's still above all the other letters. So it's kind of a funny little thing how Krishna, he weaves himself into everything as being better than the best, or at least equal to the best, because he is, of course, Krishna. Another explanation is given that the A is Krishna, because Krishna is personality. So Akara is like personality. He's the personal form of God. And then U is Radharani. So that's Krishna's energy. And the M is actually the living entity. So to go further, Krishna is representative of, there's, let's see, the A is also Sambandha. So what is Sambandha? Yeah. It's a relationship with Krishna. So everybody has some particular relationship with Krishna. And the U is Abhideya. Somebody else? What is Abhideya? Yeah, exactly. Process. So it's activities that we perform. Like how is it that we can learn to have this relationship? And Prayojana? Someone else?
Say again?
Kinda, yeah. It's like the result. Like the pure relationship itself, the goal, exactly. So what am I getting at? This is a bunch of information. Essentially speaking, Krishna consciousness is a completely personal thing. And when we read over and over again, we're talking about personalism versus impersonalism. This is kind of the ongoing theme of our lives. And it manifests itself in so many different ways. Hence, I guess, personalism. It's completely, I don't know. The explanation that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives, of course, is that it's achintya bheda bheda tattva. It's inconceivably simultaneously the same, but different. So it's the same for everyone, because we all have our unique relationship with Krishna. But it's different because we all have our unique relationship with Krishna. So it's kind of funny in that way. So we hear different things about Om, you know. We hear, especially, I don't know, if you go to colleges, I went to WVU for a while and we had a Bhakti Yoga club and it was quite successful, but everybody always wanted to chant Om. So we were, okay, actually Gauranga Kishore, he and I and a few other people, we were doing this program. So, and we was, okay, we'll chant Om, but then we have to chant Hare Krishna. That was the, and so they would regulate all these rules that, okay, you have to say Om for this many seconds, the M has to last this long, it has to be at least three times as long as saying the O part, and it has to go on for at least 30 seconds total. If it doesn't, then we have to do it again. It was like, wow, that's a lot of, we think we have regulations, you know, chanting 16 rounds, it's just a number, it's not like, if you don't chant, each mantra is at least 17.3 seconds, and if you don't do it, then you have to do it again, otherwise that mantra didn't count. So you're only at number two instead of, it's like really a logical thing. So you hear different rules regarding that. So we're fortunate in that regard that we're pretty free to chant as we like. But if you read, they're essentially, we're seeing that Om is representative of the Vedic mantra. If you do some research, you'll see, or even those who are second initiated, you know that Gayatri Mantra, it starts with Om. Everything is Om this, Om. So it's addressing, oh, Krishna. So it's sort of a veiled way of saying, like, okay, Krishna, be present here now, please. Even though he's here, we're still asking him to inundate ourselves constantly. So if you read the Bhagavad Gita specifically, there are different, you know, what is Pranava? Yes, Sarva Vedeshu. So that there's that verse of the Vedic mantra is I'm the syllable Om. So it seems that Krishna and Om they're non-different, and they are they're non-different. So can anyone explain how they're also different? But go deeper, more. Give me more. So he's saying impersonal versus personal. That's correct, but there's more to it, because we've just explained how Krishna is completely present in this particular mantra. Okay, so it's like if you meet the king and you say, oh king, versus if you're the king's brother and you call him, you know, oh my brother. That's true. If you read the Brahma Samhita, there's that verse, verse 33, Advaitam Achyutam Ananta Rupam. So the third line is Vedeshu Dorlabam Adorlabam Atma Bhaktau. So what does this mean? It means that actually we can't achieve Krishna through the Vedas. So you can get some benefit by chanting Om and by this. This is actually like this chapter is titled The First Step in God Realization. So this is the first step, understanding that everything is emanating from Krishna. Everything is coming. We're going to read probably more of this in it. In this first chapter, it starts talking about the Virat Roop, which is how everything is Krishna. So he received the second canto and he read it and he liked it very much, and he sat in the mountains for 3 months. And we're getting closer, more intimate. So now we're more personal. He just sat in the mountains for 3 months reading this book, and he was so inspired. Somebody. It's an impersonal story about personalism. I can tell you who told me the story. The origin. Mitra Sain Prabhu, he told me this story. And he read this for 3 months straight, and somehow or another he just had this one chapter. It might have been early on in ISKCON's history. They had ISKCON Press, and they were just producing this. I think Brahmatirtha discussed this. It was based in Boston, and they were just giving one chapter they were printing. And they had these beautiful illustrations back home. I have several copies of them. It's kind of, you know, I'm a history buff. But so he read this, and he just thought that I have to find some place I can meet people like this. And he just set out on the road hitchhiking. And he made his way to Los Angeles. And as far as I know, he still lives there. I don't know his name, but that's what I was told. He still lives at the Los Angeles temple. So the whole point of this, he's saying, is that you're giving some regulation to your bodily's demands, and you're making an attempt to remember God always, to remember Krishna at every step. That if we do this, then Krishna reciprocates. He gives us so much, actually. So this particular process is a little difficult, because we're talking about, you know, this is a more, I guess, scientific, maybe, is the word, or, say again? Yeah, technical. Yeah, it's like technical or didactic process of yoga, of sitting down, and, you know, there are all these rules of how to chant, when to chant. You know, if you miss the particular muhurta, then, you know, you have to somehow make it up in some way. So we're very fortunate, actually, that what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, he says bhakti atvanya ya shakham. So it's devotional service, it's only understood through the personal conception. So it's one of those things that by doing service personally, we get that personal reciprocation, we get that special touch of mercy. So if we think we can make it on our own, chances are we can't. If you can and you do, I'm, you know, all power to you, but we can't really do much on our own. It's actually, even if you look at your own life, like, what is your impetus for actually being a devotee? You know, is it because somehow you've heard this great philosophy, which it is great, and it's astounding. And the more you read, the more you realize, like, wow, there's so much going on. I don't know anything. Really, I don't know anything. Or, you know, or is it that you just met somebody who you kind of liked, and they were kind of cool, and they were a devotee? I have a friend. He was in the army, and he was in Germany. That's where he met the devotees. And I guess he found them on the internet. And he, you know, wrote an email like, hey, I'd like to come. I live at the army base, so it's hard for me to get out. Like, whatever. Can you meet me somewhere? Can you meet me at this place? And this brahmachari, he emailed him back. Yeah, okay, we can meet you. Come at 2 p.m. Well, and so he gets there, and this saffron-clad, you know, German Yeah. If you know anything about the Germans, they're kind of known for being rigid. They're not very, like, they're not very loose. They're not limber. I guess they don't practice much hatha yoga, but he comes riding down the street on a skateboard, you know, and his dhoti's flapping in the wind, and he's just ready, like, and he's got his book bag on, and he's, like, chanting. Not on his beads, but he's just, like, having a great time. And so my friend, he said that when I saw that, I thought, like, wow, if you can do that and be a Hare Krishna, like, I'm sold. I don't even have to know anything else. It's like, that's so much fun. So the rest of that story is that there's a personal conquest, I guess, that somehow he got separated from this devotee, and this devotee thought it would be a good idea to send him out on book distribution, you know. He never even learned the Maha Mantra, let alone anything else. So he got separated. He doesn't really speak German. He still speaks terrible German. And he's just, like, walking around looking for anything that looks familiar. And somehow he made it to the temple. And that, he just felt like, because of his personal endeavor, like, Krishna, he really, like, said, okay, come on, join the ride. So that was Partasarthi, by the way, if anybody knows Partasarthi. He's well known in ISKCON circles for being the Hare Krishna arm militarist. So it goes on. It's just like life is this series of I guess, a fight for us of this personal nature to let it come out and let it shine. And you see those people who are advanced devotees, who are actually really, like, really amazingly, you know, this spark of Krishna consciousness is emanating from them, and you want to latch on to that and just, like, engulf yourself in that same emotion. You see that even the most simple, tiny aspects that they're attentive to. You know, if there's, like, a spoon out of place, they notice it and they think, wow, you know, that's not so nice. Maybe Krishna, he's not so glorified by this. So they'll try to change it or try to help people in some way. So what is it? Prabhupada, he makes this statement about how, like, you will know, I don't know the exact words, but the essence is that, like, you'll know how much devotion you have by how nice your tilak is. So what could that possibly mean? You know, like, what if I put on bad tilak? It's a matter of where is our consciousness? What's our attention? Are we attentive, saying, like, Krishna, you know? Because the ritual of putting on tilak is actually accepting that this body is a temple. You know, we make that explanation to anybody who asks, like, what's with that funny stuff? Why you got dirt on your face? Like, what's going on? We tell them, like, hey, you know, this, we're marking our body. We want to be known that this body, I'm using it. I'm using it for Krishna's service. And if you'd like to know more, you know, please log on to whatever, you know, let me know. And so if it, you know, we have tilak on and it's like over here and up here, and yeah, it just, people want, they're just, it looks really just like it's dirt, you know? And so you have to wonder. It's like, there are so many explanations. You see, like, a conch shell, for instance. It says if the person is not qualified to blow a conch shell, that actually, the goddess of fortune, she leaves. And she'll only come back when somebody who's qualified to blow the conch shell blows the conch shell. So it's like these little things, you see, that's, so is it really tilak at that point? Huh? This is just maybe a, you know what I mean? It's, I'm not saying that you're not really wearing tilak because it looks bad, because I must have absolutely no sort of devotional sentiments, because I have to put tilak on like 8 times before it looks even okay. You know, it's really a personal struggle of mine. But so it's just all these little things, they add up to so much. So, I mean, Krishna, he's controlling everything. And that's the essence. That's what this whole chapter is essentially about, is that, I mean, we think we can get out of Krishna's purview in some way, but can we? No, we can't. We can maybe, like, I don't know, maybe Krishna, he keeps some information about us away, you know, Krishna does that sometimes, but that's, to change, to really change our hearts, we have to focus, let me rephrase this so no one gets the wrong idea. It's not that we have to focus on every little thing, it's just that we have to be focused on the great picture, which is It's actually our own benefit and everyone else's benefit. If we are apply ourselves to rightfully like becoming Krishna conscious as best as we can, then it's actually everybody in the world benefits. Because it's just how it works. It's Yudhisthira, right? Yudhisthira, he says that devotee, he's a holy place in himself because he carries Lord Vishnu in his heart. So if we actually believe that we have Vishnu in our heart, there's a lot of stuff that we shouldn't be doing. Like, so self-introspection. So it's hard to be honest with yourself freely because we think, oh yeah, I'm all right, you know, I'm doing good, I'm getting up every day, I give everybody Haribol Peru, how are you, Haribol Peru, you know, that. But it doesn't really cut it. There's so much more. There's this like dearth of actual like relationship, and that, you know. We give the term relationship, but you know, Krishna gives the term rasa, that taste, that like real mellow, you know, that we can experience with everybody. And we find like great devotees that we meet them one time and we feel like, oh, we've known them forever. Oh, wow, they have something that I want. You know, I gotta have it. And we should be willing to fight for that. Not, I mean, maybe even physically if it comes to that, you know, we gotta cut out somebody's tongue. We gotta, you know, you never know. Come prepared, right? A Vaishnava always comes prepared. No. But we got to fight for that realization. And how do we fight for that realization? We have to be properly armed, right? So what's the proper armaments? Say again?
Humility.
Yeah, that's a really good armament. Put on some humility, you know? I have a friend, he used to say that if you're not humble, it'll come in the way of humiliation. And so it's true, you know, we come so proud, and then how many times does Krishna just tell us, okay, yeah, okay, keep thinking that, and then the next thing we know, our nose is in the dirt. What else? What else do we need? Sadhana, yeah. Yeah, and that's a form of humility, right? It's accepting that I don't know everything in the universe. I mean, that's a big realization for a lot of people, you know. I don't know everything. And so I have to accept that someone else knows what's best for me. So that you gotta accept this practice, this regulation. So, I mean, this verse is also talking about regulation. So regulation is so helpful in that regard. So we're practicing. One day I'll be a real devotee, but for now I got a nice dhoti at least. Anything else? Any determination? Yeah, the Nectar of Instruction, it talks so much about determination that you have to. If you don't have determination, you're never gonna make it. Like what? Because obviously, I guess if you don't have determination, you're not even gonna try. You just be at home watching TV and eating nachos or whatever it is kids do these days. I feel like you have something to say, Nimai Pandit. What is it? Okay. Yeah, we're just doing nothing. I mean, and we can do so much with Krishna consciousness. There's not some shell that says, this is Krishna consciousness. And once you exit this, you're completely in nonsense. And it's really, you never know. I've talked to people sometimes that I think, man, this kid, he doesn't know anything. What is he doing? You know, he just looks like, and everything he does in his personal life, it's like really like nonsense, and you know, he's just watching TV and eating nachos all day. But, and then you talk to him, and you just realize like, wow, this person has so much faith. Like, I wish I had this much faith. There's one person in particular that I really like, I always have this admiration for him, because I don't know, I read this thing that he wrote as a kid. I was cleaning out the old Gurukul in North Carolina, and I just picked up this notebook, and I looked through it, and it was just like, he wrote, you know, you could see the basic outline of the class that he was giving, and he wrote in the liner notes something that, you know, if people don't believe that Krishna is God, then, you know, certainly they're the most foolish person ever. And it was written by like a 6-year-old boy. And it's like, wow, that's a realization. And then if you talk to him, he's just like, yeah, I mean, you know, Krishna, Krishna is God. I can't believe anything else in this world. It's just, so it's this unique process that it's completely like versatile, you know, there's nothing that can bend and ebb as much as Krishna consciousness. It's such an evolving thing because we're here in the material world, and you know that there in the material world there's change, right? There's change. It says that time exists only to facilitate the dwindling process of life. Without time, there is no death. So it's this negative change. It's like everything just has this capacity to continually dissipate. Less and less and less and less. And we see it even with esoteric concepts. We see now like God consciousness is becoming less prominent, and things that seem maybe like God consciousness in some way, they're really what it probably says, veiled atheism. It's just veiled atheism. So we see that even the concept that God exists, it's becoming less as time goes on. But in the spiritual world, there's no time. Just life goes on. Still there's change, but the change is growth. Growth, it just keeps increasing and increasing. Even Krishna. Krishna doesn't stay the same. You read that Krishna, he's ever expanding. He's constantly new and fresh. And that's why Krishna consciousness, when you're really applying it and becoming like, you know, this great devotee, because you think that you're not so great. That's the litmus test. Oh, I'm not really so great, you know. This person, he's such a great devotee. That's I heard Karnamrita Bhumi, he said once in the class that, you know, the new devotee, the neophyte devotee, however you want to say it, the Kanishta Adhikari, he suffers because he only sees that Krishna exists here in the deity and in the spiritual master. So that's a suffering point. I mean, in one sense, it's a great step above everyone else in the world, but that the Uttama Adhikari, he suffers because he sees everyone else as such a great devotee, but I am not. So everyone is suffering. Even the great devotee, he's suffering. He's lamenting. Like, I could be more. I could do more. I could, you know, somehow I can spread that Krishna is more. So greed. That's another armament we can put on. We can put on greed. We can factually be greedy, but it has to be rightly applied. Anybody have any comments, questions, corrections, criticisms? Any sort of discussion of personalism versus impersonalism they got? I can go on. I'm just stopping now to see if anybody has any points they'd like to bring out.
So this topic is related to Sukadeva Goswami Mahapariksit, and yeah. He only has 7 days to die.
That's correct.
So why do you think he's giving him this impersonal stuff first and he only has 7 days to die? Is he just like trying to see if he wants more, or what do you...
No. It's just like, you know, Vyasadeva, he writes this whole composium of Vedic literature, and then he's still not satisfied. Right? He has to bring out the personal aspect of Krishna. So impersonalism is actually the springboard for personalism. So, what is it? In the Bhagavad Gita, there's a purport. I don't recall which one. Maybe 728 or 823, I'm thinking, where Prabhupada is explaining how that the syllable Om is for people who have not yet realized that Krishna is there. So by chanting that, there's some purification. So it's actually the first step in God realization. We say there's the Brahma Jyoti, right? That's the first thing we can understand, is that you know, there is some energy there. There's something there. And then beyond that is seeing that God is actually everywhere. And beyond that is that, you know, God is a person. So it seems that that's sort of the... what's going on? It's like these are the steps by which most people can understand that, you know, Krishna is this, what it, think Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he defines it. Krishna is a rascal cowherd boy, you know, who plays on the flute, you know, and that we are just his servants, you know. So it just seems that in the Vedic construct there always has to be this like sort of didactic points that, you know, we've already essentially traversed across because we're engaged in devotional service directly. But because other people are going to read it, there has to be like, okay, this, you'll experience this and this is going on. And so if you chant this om and you follow this principle, then you can start to see that actually God is everywhere, you know. And then from seeing that God is everywhere, you can understand that it doesn't make sense that there's an energy without, you know, the energetic. Does that make sense? Or? Okay.
In this chapter they describe like many impersonal process, yoga process. So I asked him that we do not follow these processes, so like why they are given over here. So he gave like some explanation. He said that first of all, like, so Shukdev is Goswami is describing from the beginning. So he will go from the basics first to the more advanced stage. So he will not jump directly to advanced. He said like he will not jump directly to say 10th canto. So he's describing this step by step. But he also said, like Prabhupada described, that first and second cantos are the foundation of all Bhagavatam. So he said we should constantly read them and like make it our strong foundation. This is what I understood. And so he, like I asked him, like it is said that we should see Krishna, see in mountains and like how it is parts. So he said, yeah, we should actually try to do that also. Like to see how Krishna is there in the material world, because we are in the material world. Like we have, like my understanding, what I got from it is like even though we are practicing devotional service, doesn't mean that we still are in the material world. We are not so advanced. Like we have been living here for so long. So it's these chapters are important because it helps us see how Krishna is there in this whole material world.
Okay.
So that was explanation.
That's correct.
Also, like yesterday, I think it was explained that this, like you say, we don't follow those process because it was a different millennium. But actually, wasn't it this millennium? Because Krishna had already left the planet. So this was like the beginning of Kali Yuga, isn't it?
Yeah, there's some overlap. If you read, there's never just like, okay, it's 1201, so now it's, you know, now it's Kali Yuga. Dwapara Yuga has ended. There's always some overlap of what's going on. So if you read the beginning of the Bhagavatam, it talks about how the sages, they're all performing these great sacrifices to mitigate what's going to be going on in Kali Yuga. They're trying to like say, okay, Krishna, we're performing these sacrifices now. Please, like, don't let Kali Yuga be so bad. At least not so fast. So there's just a little bit of overlap there. So I guess the answer is yes and no. Technically speaking, it was in essence Kali Yuga, but it was also still the end of Dwapara Yuga. So it's like that. Even if you read the Manus, you know, it's not just like, okay, I'm done. I'm not the Manu anymore. I'm going. And then some other Manu comes in. There's a little bit of interaction, like, okay, this is what's going on. These are the problems you're dealing with. These are the successes we've had. I'm here for a little bit. Okay, how can we help that? So, I mean, it's a little maybe gross example, but it's I'm sure it's more eloquently done. Yeah, it's even in the United States, you see that it's not. It is. It's if you get into. What is it? I think it's the 6th canto. It talks about the Manus. It talks about how you don't just go over it. Who is it? His name has just escaped me. Hanuman Prashak Swami. He's a very interesting, actually amazing character. And he gives an outline of the whole Bhagavatam and he explains how everything is working. And he gives a really detailed explanation of the Manus. And I think I can probably find, I have a copy of that somewhere, and he gives where that's given. So if you'd like, I can certainly hand that to you. Say again. I can email it to you. So, all right. Anything else? Okay, Arjuna.
We see that in the outside world, like who are not following devotional service, they are very determined about, not all of them, but some of them are very determined what they want to do materially, and they will like spend sleepless nights or whatever they want to achieve. And here we are practicing devotional service. Some of us are also pursuing a career outside.
Mm-hmm.
And to balance both of them becomes a difficult task. So should we also try to take to that strategy, like sleepless nights and...
No.
What is your opinion on that?
No, you shouldn't. It's not very beneficial for you in the long run. I mean, people, they generally, if you look, they don't sleep nights because they're actually making up for a long time of actually having not done the proper amount of things. You know, if you, for instance, school, most of the time if a student goes to sleep this night, it's one of two reasons. Either he's partying or he's making up because of all the partying he did to study for the test that he has. So it's not very beneficial. It's better to be steady in what you're doing. But it probably gives a few examples in this regard. One, he says, it's better to be a moon than it is to be a shooting star. So the moon, it's always there, you know. It's every night, the moon is there. It's sometimes brighter than other times, but it's steady as anything. You can predict with great accuracy when the moon is going to be what. But a shooting star, it fizzles out really fast. So, I mean, that analogy is pretty beneficial for any aspect of life. It's not just like devotional service or, you know, devotional service as a career or devotional service as a career in the workplace, or it's everything. Better to have that steadiness, that sort of determination, because this intermittent determination is just get it done and I'll be done and then I'll forget everything and then be on with my life. So in this regard, there's one lecture that Prabhupada gave. It was in Montreal, 1968. And at the end of it, Pradyumna, he asks this question. He says, you know, Prabhupada, it says in the Nectar of Devotion, it says that a devotee, he should be expert. Does that mean that he should be expert in everything? He should go and learn how to do every single thing that there is to do? And, you know, is that possible? Like, and Prabhupada, he thought about it and he just said, no, it doesn't. It means that whatever you're doing, you should do to the best of your ability. And so, and that's like a real sort of determination. It's not like, okay, I'm going to get myself through medical school by hook or crook. It's like, but I have no real inclination to be a doctor. It's like seeing, okay, everything I'm doing the best that I can at. And then naturally, with some good guidance, I will find what I'm good at doing. And really, like, I can focus on that. Is that helpful at all, or... So, yeah, and that's what determination really means. It means like staying the course. It's not just like there are going to be bumps in the road, of course. That's a given. No matter where you drive, you know, you're going to come across something. Especially India. So India is actually just one bump. Just constant. So that's its determination, and it's really, but bumps are also there. What do they say that to build character? They build your resolve. So if there's some difficulty, you know, it actually, if you make it through that, it's even better. So I mean, we can come across so many personal stories. I'm sure that as little kids in America, we have this story, the little engine that could. So. It's, you know, it's just a kid's story about somebody who just kept trying and kept going, and eventually they were able to accomplish, you know, what they wanted. It was about a train, actually. I guess I should be honest. It wasn't technically a person, but the personality. Yeah. Was that? Yeah, it was a train that was able to feel. It was, you know, it was the personality of train. I don't... Yeah. So, I mean, in what is it? The nectar of instruction also gives that you should endeavor with confidence. So you shouldn't be determined to do something that you're not, you know, there's no reason to do. So it just says, so keep going, keep it up, keep up the good work, and let go of the bad work.
Okay. Says that one should control the mind by chanting.
So okay.
In what respects the process of Krishna consciousness would be different than controlling the mind by chanting Om?
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
In what respects would the process of Krishna consciousness be different than controlling the mind by chanting Om?
Okay. Yeah, we can maybe like a Om. It's not as catchy. That's really, you know, Lord Chaitanya, he decided that the Maha Mantra is much more catchy. The difference is actually that like he was saying that it's this personal aspect. So by chanting Om, you're actually neglecting the personal aspect of Krishna. It's like focusing on the Brahma Jyoti, seeing the impersonal form of Krishna. That okay, there's something else. So, but it's not accepting that the something else is much more than I could ever be, or you know, it's not accepting that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So by not accepting that, you only get so far. You know, I mean, you can make a lot of progress with that, but it, still, you know, 10,000 miles versus infinite miles is still a gulf of difference, because Krishna, you know, Krishna contains this impersonal aspect. So, does that answer your question? So, but at the same time, chanting Hare Krishna, it's there because it helps us control and regulate our mind too. So, I mean, we hear all the time about how okay, you chant your 16 rounds and then you do anything that you like in the world. I mean, you can do that, but it's ultimately at the end of your life, it's not gonna have much potency, because that's also, you know, lip service is sort of the same thing. It's neglecting that Sri Nam is Sri Nam. It's just saying, okay, there's something that I say to control my mind, and now that my mind's controlled for the day, I'm good to go. So, Ananda Seva Prabhu. Ooh, this is gonna be good.
I'm just saying, I wanted to say something about personalism in ISKCON. I've never met a more interesting group of people in my whole life. I mean, everybody has so much personality. And I remember when I first started coming to the temple, they told me, you can just be yourself, but you have to give up sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And I said, well, that's what's left. That's what I thought. But everything else comes out when you give those things up. I mean, like the real you comes out and
that
really manifests.
That real, like, you know, prayojana, it's the goal is that real loving relationship that you have with Krishna. And it starts to manifest itself with your dealings with other people.
Mm-hmm.
You find that devotees, they start becoming more tolerant, even though this other person, their lifestyle is completely wacko according to them. You know, it's still like, so they have all these great qualities as a result.
And also, when you're following the four regs, you lose a lot of friends, a lot of old friends, because your relationship was based on like sex or drugs or and rock and roll. I mean, and so you gotta wonder, like, why were they my friend? But then when you meet devotees, it's like, why are you my friend? I mean, you can't really get anything from me. But
yeah, that's a funny thing too. So many times I've sat and thought, like, I have no business in the world with these other people that I'm sitting with right now. But yet here I am, and we're all like working together harmoniously. So even the conflicts aren't as bad.
Yeah.
My friend Mala Harakanta, she said once that when she was first becoming a devotee, she asked some devotee, well, why should I become a devotee? It seems like you don't really do anything differently. And there's still hardships, so what's the point? And he said, the person she was talking to, he said that, well, in the material world, life is like this. And he just went up and down like this. And then he said, but when you're practicing devotional service, life is like this. It's always increasing. So even the lows, they're not so low.
Yeah, well, I guess we can sing
to Sunanda's in the kitchen.
Oh.
Sarva vijaja jodindriya tahika jive phle visaya sagare dharma je jivayati lobo moy sadurmati kagajika kitina samsare krishna bodha doya moy kori bodha jiva joy swaprasadana dilobai senamrita pao radha krishna gunagao premedeko chaitanya nitai janimai jainitai shri prabhupada ki jai jai.
Okay, I have two questions. One is, we were talking earlier how Krishna is everything and stuff. So I was wondering, why does he in the Gita specify like out of all the, because he's like out of all the fish, I am the shark, out of all.
That's an easy question to answer. if you look at it, the question is that if Krishna is everything, why does he indicate that he's always like, you know. Among the aquatics, I am the shark. Why? If Krishna is everything, why? In the Bhagavad Gita, why does Krishna say that? Like, among the aquatics, I am the shark. Among the seasons, I am the life-bearing spring. And exactly right. What Arjuna said is right. It's because it's the best. Whatever that Krishna says like that, it's always the best of those. So if you go into the ocean, the shark, he's the number one. You know, there's no predator higher than the shark. And the ocean, and if you go in the seasons, you know, spring is the best because there's flowers, foods are growing, you know, everything is new, there's new life. So it's just like that, whatever there is, he's the topmost human being. So.
Okay, so then, following from that, then why does he say that he, out of all the sacred syllables, he is Om? Why doesn't he say his name or something? Like, why do we chant?
Say again. Well, yeah. Well, Hare Krishna is 1632 syllables. The reason is that in the Sanskrit language, in the different like prayers and mantras, things like that, Om is always the first thing. It's an addressing. It's just saying like, "Oh, Supreme Lord."
Mm-hmm.
So it just the syllable Om, it occurs all over the place. And what he specifically says among the Vedic mantras, I am the syllable Om.
Mm-hmm.
So. That's why it's just simply like it's an address. It's just like your name is Estefania.
Yeah.
So, but sometimes I will call you Mrs. Estefania or Ms.
Yeah,
Estefania. Okay. So it's the same. It's getting your attention. But is that satisfactory?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay.
And but also, so would it help? Would it help before we start chanting like our japa in the mornings and stuff to like. Kind of do what the verse was saying, kind of just like relax the mind, maybe chant silently Om or something in order to realign and then start chanting our japa?
Probably better to do there are thousands and thousands of verses that actually glorify the potency of the Maha Mantra. So if your desire is to like silence the mind, it's probably better to concentrate on what you're about to do. Because Om is still neglecting that personal feature. So it's like getting yourself warmed up for a baseball game by playing basketball. You know, it's like they're involving balls, they're a sport, there's activity, but at the same time, it's not the same set of exercises. One is not containing everything that the other has. Although with Krishna, it's simultaneously yes and no. So my recommendation, if that's your desire, is you can pick up a copy of like the Stavavali or something like that, and there's a chapter in that it's all just prayers like glorifying the potency, the effects of Krishna's holy name. It's the Stavavali or the Stavamala or just different things like that. So, anyway. Hare Krishna, thank you for your tolerance.